Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with the beautiful, multi-talented co-creator of the unique Urbanite Theater in Sarasota, Florida, Summer Dawn. Listen to Summer's ironic and unusual story of the way she discovered that she wanted to be an actor and how that discovery has informed her entire life. Hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
is about being the person you really are. It's ironic, but clear to me as a psychotherapist that so many of us are living lives that only partially demonstrate who we really are. And as a therapist, it seems to me that that means we are living lives that are not as satisfying or rewarding or fulfilling, or even as happy as we are capable of being. In this show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I do that because I believe that these people, at least in the area of their work, are exactly who they are. They are all that they are. And when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be the person you really are. And of course, it is my hope that if you are listening and this is not true of you, that you consider the fact that you might be able to recover whatever it is that you had to leave behind, lose, deny, or forget that was true of you. In this interview with Summer, you can hear a woman who discovered very, very, very young what captured her, what she wanted to do, what turned her on, and, of course, who she really was. And luckily for Summer and for all of those who have gotten to see her on stage, she had a mother who not only honored that, not indulged it, but embraced it, so that little Summer could actually become the person she really is. This is a long interview. I didn't want to cut more than I absolutely had to make it fit in the show, so I'm going to stop talking and let Summer tell you her own story. Here now is Summer Dawn. Okay, so I am here with Summer Dawn in the Urbanite Theater. I don't know if I have ever told you, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Okay, and that is clearly you. And the art the art to which you seem to be giving your life is maybe theater as an umbrella, acting specifically, what would you say?
That's a tough question. I would say kind of everything.
Everything.
Acting will and always be kind of my first passion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing like it, and that feeds my creative soul in a very different way than, you know, because of the company, we do design on a lot of the other shows as well, so I do enjoy that as well, but acting, I would say, is you know, my first love. I do love to express myself that way, but I also enjoy making theater and collaborating with other artists.
In order to make theater.
In order to make theater is right up there with it. I was very lucky. I grew up at a professional theater.
Well, hold on.
So that's kind of where that part of it is something that is also part of my life and life's blood as well.
Well, okay, so I only ask one question,
yeah,
which you have begun to answer.
Yes.
And that is, can you tell us, clearly you can recall, but can you tell us the very first moment in your life when acting, being involved in theater, having other people look at you, telling stories, any of that, called you, drew you, became important to you?
Yeah, I mean, from a very, very early age, I was kind of, you know, I think like most kids who are, you know, interested in art, always put on skits, and my sister and I would always write skits, and we would practice songs that then we would perform for, like, my mom on, like, Friday. We'd put on costumes and do that whole thing.
Okay, wait. How old?
I probably started around, like, six or seven.
And your sister's older, younger?
She's younger.
All right.
Younger.
And so whose idea was it to do these things?
I think it was a combination. We just always did.
And did you, you seemed to allude to the fact that there was theater in your life. Do you think you saw it?
My first play that I ever saw was Raisin in the Sun when I was like 4. And at Snow Community College in Utah, in Ephraim. And then my mom, Ben, took me to see, it's Waiting for the Dark, Waiting Until Dark. And the lead actress in it, she's blind.
Yeah. It's Wait Until Dark.
Wait Until Dark. And so the lead actress is blind. And my mom was friends with the young woman who played that role. And so I remember going to her, like, apartment. And I was, like, just kept staring at her and touching her and, like, moving my hand in front of her face. And I kept asking over and over, why can you see me? Why can you see me? You can't see me. How can you see me? You were blind. And then they were like, she was like, oh, I was pretending I wasn't really blind. And I was like, it was like light bulb.
Yeah, well, say what that light bulb was.
It was just like, oh, that was what I wanted to do. It was,
yes,
like, there was the light bulb.
Right, right. That was what acting was.
Yep, that was what acting was. And then, you know. I was always playing somebody else. I used to pretend to be a different animal every day, and I wouldn't eat dinner, and so my mom would have to feed me on the floor if I pretended to be a cat.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That was a seminal moment, right?
Yeah.
You understood someone could be other than they were. And that knowledge, knowing that you could be someone other than you were, captured you so completely.
That was it.
That's right.
That was the light bulb.
That you made a life of it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And wonderful.
Yeah. I drove my mother crazy at an early age. I know.
But God bless her. She didn't say,
no.
Well, then go to bed, then you won't eat.
Yeah.
No, she fed you on the floor.
Yeah.
Good mommy.
Yeah, because I would refuse. And I wasn't, we talked, I wasn't a big talker. So, like, when I stuck to something,
yeah,
I was very serious about it.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
Why can you see me? I remember just being like, oh.
Well, and you still remember it.
Yeah.
And you were four.
Yeah.
Right. So you know.
Yeah.
You know it was pivotal, right?
Yeah.
Well, wow.
And when I was nine, my best girlfriend at the time, Melissa Oglesby, she's still one of my best girlfriends, there was a local theater in my hometown, and so she dragged me to an audition, and so we auditioned for Peter Pan. I sang Stupid Cupid. I forgot the words. And I remember being so nervous and, like, my arms turning to jello, like that just out-of-body kind of experience. And then I got cast in the show, and that was kind of...
Even though
I forgot the words, that was kind of it.
Okay, wait. I'm remembering that you said that on Fridays you would put this on for your mother. This is so interesting to me. Was this a ritual, or was this just something that you two said, okay, sit down, Mom?
We just kind of always did it. We really, that was what we did to kind of entertain ourselves and
clearly this
to keep ourselves busy, and, you know, we never really performed it for anybody outside of our own living room, but...
Okay, but your mother didn't say... I mean, your mother encouraged it to some extent, right? I mean, she didn't say, what are you doing?
No, I mean, she encouraged it, but didn't, you know, discourage it either. It was just something that we kind of did. I was always a very, really quiet kid, so unless, and still am, unless I'm kind of performing, I'm not a big talker. So family members will see me in a show, public will see me and be like, oh, like, you're so different on stage, because I'm just not a big... speaker, boisterous.
Yeah, you're not that outgoing person.
No, I'm not. I'm very reserved and very quiet. So that was, I guess, maybe if I psychological...
Yeah.
Psychological, that's not even a word. Psychoanalyzed myself. I think that was just my way to kind of express myself as a kid. And I was always, you know, unlike my sister, if my sister was quiet, you knew that she was up to no good. Where if I was quiet, it was usually I was... making some imaginary thing up, and would kind of do a lot of that. And so that was kind of that. We would learn songs. We were obsessed with the Mickey Mouse Club. We used to watch that religiously and would, like, copy some of the songs.
Okay, so clearly this is the beginning of your life. You're doing this from...
Yeah.
Right? You came in with it, or you...
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Right. Okay, so your friend... brings you to the audition, you wouldn't have gone?
It was kind of serendipitous. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know that it was there, and my mom was a single mom and, like, working, so, you know, unless she'd kind of dragged me, and then, you know, her family, because they were all in the, like, she was in the play, like, I would just hitch rides and stuff with them, so that's kind of the start, and that's... I credit that theater that I grew up with almost kind of everything and shaping me a lot of who I am as a human being, my work ethic, kind of the impression of what I thought theater was, and then times even in professional land when it wasn't what I kind of always wanted it to be. So part of being back with the Urbanite is it's kind of that again, where it's not just you, it's a
collaboration.
It's a collaboration, and because that's how I... grew up, yes, of course, my mom, but being at the theater all day, I was raised by...
Okay, wait, hold on.
50 other parents.
Yeah, so, in a way, we skipped something here.
Yeah.
Okay, so, it's 9 years old, you get into Peter Pan.
I was in Peter Pan.
And you liked it.
I liked it. It's really funny, so, I remember, and it makes me laugh now, but I had this moment in Peter Pan where it was... I was too tall to be a lost boy, something I've never forgiven the artistic director for. So there was this moment at the very end of the play, we're on the pirate ship, and Peter Pan, is when he challenges Captain Hook. Like, I vaguely kind of remember what's happening here. But there's this moment where it was my job to hand him his hat, to hand Peter Pan his hat. And I remember there was this other girl in the play, Jennifer Page, and somehow she would hand him his hat. And I remember being so upset that she stole my job of handing him his hat, because in my 9-year-old mind, that was my part, and it was the time that everybody, like,
would be looking at you.
Looking at me. But in my, and I remember, I think we went to, like, I think the dance captain or something, like, to talk about it. It's really funny. They must have been like, oh, my God.
No, they probably said, this is an actress in your
life. You know, so I just was so upset that she stole my job. Yeah, that's my job.
Okay, so then you have alluded several times to growing up in this theater, but you haven't said how it happened.
Yeah, so this theater was started by Paul and Mary Crabtree in the 50s or 60s. And they both were New York actors and had been on Broadway and had family in that area in Tennessee and were wanting to start a family. And so they decided to start this theater. And so it started out, you know, really as a thing for the community, and the community backed behind it. So it was a community theater, and then it kind of grew and morphed into a professional regional theater, and they would use, you know, the filler as the community guys, and that was kind of where, and they would bring in professional actors from across the country, and so that was kind of my stomping ground. So I did Peter Pan, I think when I was 9 and 10, and then, what did I do next? Anne of Green Gables, the musical, which is really funny because I played Prissy Andrews, and I was so I'm tall, but I was this tall then.
Yes.
And so I played Prissy Andrews, and it was so embarrassing because they, at the end of the play, Prissy gets with the school teacher, and they made me pregnant at the end of the play. And the director kept yelling at me, like, in rehearsal of, like, not flirting with the teacher enough, and I just remember being so, like, embarrassed, because I was only, like, 12. I didn't know what that meant, and everybody thought I was much older than I was.
Because you were so
tall. I was so tall, and then when they realized I was, you know, 12 years old, they were like, oh, my God. I remember being mortified that I had to, like, flirt with this, because I didn't know what flirting was, yes. And I remember turning bright red, which is perfect for the character. Like, I was the character, but I didn't know it at the time. So I did Anne of Green Gables with them, Christie the musical, which that was really cool, because we went, was it Christie? I think it was, I don't know, they all blend together, but no, it was Spirit of the Mountain, so it was another show that show got picked up to go to the Performing Arts Center in Nashville. So very similar to, like, what the Van Weasel is here, but the big TPAC in Nashville, we got to take that show there. So that was kind of...
So you got to go.
I got to go, and that was really cool because it was, like, this big thing, and we got to go down on a bus and, you know, a new theater. And so that was really awesome. And then did, you know, a million other shows there with them. And then when
I was
14, 15, they hired me to be an intern. So then I became official.
Oh, I see. Okay, so are there acting classes anywhere here?
No, I would take dance classes. I actually started my own internship by telling them that I was going to pick up trash around the theater and they were going to let me take dance classes for free. Because we couldn't afford dance classes.
Right.
So that was the dealio. And so I just kind of created my own internship. And then they were stuck with me.
They made it official. Right, right.
And so that was, didn't take acting classes, but got to, for me, it was always, my acting training, I feel, was kind of backwards.
Well, hold on.
We'll explain what I mean by that.
Yeah, I understand. But during this time, you're still in school. I mean, you know, you're in elementary school, you're in junior high school, in middle school, you're in high school, right?
Yeah.
Right? Are you doing anything there? I mean, do they have a drama class? Do they have shows?
I took a drama class in high school. But it was kind of defunct, like we didn't really do anything. But, you know, I really lived at the theater, so I was there. As soon as school got out, I would was in rehearsal or would take a bus there or would ride
my
bike there.
You would pick up trash.
Yeah, so I was there. I, like, lived and breathed there.
I got it. So I'm assuming that at pretty early you decided this was going to be what you were going to do, or
kind
not?
Kind of. I don't think I really knew. It just, I was so, one of the things I love about theater is, like, the ritual of theater. And so I just loved every second of it. I loved rehearsal. I loved being in the room with everybody. I loved, for me, it was, like, so much fun. And I think, you know, my parents got divorced. I think for me, it was, like, a big escapism. And so I loved being...
Yeah, it was a family.
It was a family. And I loved being around so many other people. I loved listening to everybody's stories.
Yeah.
I loved the smells. I loved the sounds. I just loved... Like, you couldn't get rid of me. I just loved
no,
being,
no, no.
Loved
I,
being there. And I did
it.
Every... This was an intern. You know, your slave labor, as
right,
you should
yeah.
be. But I did... At that summer, they did this Tennessee, what was it, some 10 Fest, Celebration of Tennessee, something or other. So it was like 10 days of this big, huge festival. And so like we painted the building, we built sets, we ran sound. I worked with the Dixie Chicks before they were the Dixie Chicks, you know. So we got to do a lot of cool stuff. And so... Learning for me was kind of just soaking it up,
yeah.
the sponge of
yeah.
watching the, you know, I idolized the professional actors that they would bring in. I mean, they were gods to me, you know. I sometimes couldn't even speak to them just because, like, I idolized them so much and thought it was so cool and would ask them questions and would watch them and...
Well, and then you also had direction and you heard directors direct,
yeah,
so
yeah.
you were right?
Yeah, and then it was really funny in the big musical stuff. Like, I figured out really early, I mean, maybe I was a ham, but I figured out real early that I knew that if I stood there in that group, I'd get up in the front. So, like, yeah, so that was that, and then kind of the crossover for me... and I almost failed high school. I missed so much school because of doing the shows. And my mom never had to punish me because it was like, you don't get to be in a show. So that was like death. There was this show that the theater does called Smoke on the Mountain, which, believe it or not, they're still doing it. I can't believe it. But at one point in time, it was one of the most produced shows in the country. And it's a Southern gospel show that this theater, like, just hit goldmine with for the area and the demographic that's there. It's perfect. And so at the time, the girl who was in the show, who was playing a part that I ended up playing, not just at that theater, but across the country for, like, 15 years, had quit because she was going off to college and gave no notice, nothing. And then... I guess that was my Mr. DeMille moment because I just happened to be going across the stage to sweep the floor. And they were like, what are we going to do? Who are we going to cast? We have a show this weekend. And it was like, we'll put Summer in it. And at the time, I had never sang a solo by myself. Like, you had to play instruments, which I didn't do. But, I mean, looking back, once again, I was that character, so mm-hmm. it wasn't really that much of a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the first... time I started to take it a little seriously, because then there was a big part and a lot of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And then they toured that show, so I got to go with it. So that was kind of
yeah. So you were a professional then, almost.
Yeah,
at a very young age.
Yeah.
How old were you then with the?
I think 14 or 15.
Right. Right.
And then so that was, you know, then
if this was a professional theater, were you getting paid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I got paid as an intern $75 a week. And then when I got into Smoke, I think I made $250 a week, which at the time...
That's a lot of money. That is a lot of money. And did you get in the union?
Not then, because they're non-equity. And they would hire equity contracts on occasion.
But not
at that time.
No.
And then when it was time to kind of go to college,
yes,
I was like, well, it wasn't like this is, if I don't do this, I can't do anything else. I just didn't know my college opportunities were A or B. I didn't really have a lot of choices, and you know, my parents didn't really know much about theater, and so it was like, well, if I'm going to do this, I guess it's the only thing I know that I can kind of do. But the reality of what being a professional actor mm-hmm. was, like, hadn't really connected, and still didn't connect for, I think, a very long time. It was just something that I had always done, so I didn't really know that there was even options.
Well, I think, you know, if you're not raised with people who really understand the business, I think it's, I think it takes getting into it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's obvious.
No, and myself and then one other friend who also grew up at the same company, she's a professional actor and still, like, performing, and so we've had a very similar kind of upbringing and experience professionally out in the world as well, and so we've chatted, like, you know, we didn't know, if you don't know, but at the time, like, how that experience put us so far ahead of the curveball.
Right.
We're doing rep at 14.
That's right.
So
you were really a professional at 14.
Yeah, so, like,
you weren't trained or paid, but never mind.
Yeah, so, you know, like, that was normal.
Yes,
so we didn't really know another way. So that was kind of my...
So did you major in theater?
Yeah, so I went to Western Kentucky University, because that was the one that was farthest away. So that's where I wanted to go. And so that's where I went to school. So I was at BFA.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience was okay. I got to do a lot of shows, mm-hmm. which is really, really great. But there, at the time, the program was in transition. So I think I learned what I put into it. So I learned a lot from doing a lot of shows. Acting training, didn't really have any,
mm-hmm.
once again.
Yeah, right.
Knew that I needed to keep up taking voice lessons. So I did. And then I'm not a dancer, I'm a mover, but I would take dance and then audit the classes that I knew I wouldn't pass. And then just, I think I was there. I left because I had so many AP credits when I went in. So I left school, I think, after four semesters and finished up. This is pre-internet land, so I finished up school via mail. and then I had done summer stock during college at this company called Jenny Wiley. And I got hired there because I had done this little show, this little thing called Smoke on the Mountain, and I had went to a spring SETCs, which when you're in college, you have to go to, like, the pre-screening to be able to go, which I hadn't done because I'd had a show. And so a lot of people were going, and I was like, well, from the theater, I was like, well, I'll just tag along so I see what it is. And then I looked and I saw that this one company was doing the show, and, like, now I would never in a million years, but I was, you know, a ballsy 18-year-old kid, but I saw that they were doing Smoke on the Mountain, so I knocked on their door, hotel room door, and I was like, hi, I'm Jenny Sanders. I don't have a number, but I'd like to audition for you. And they were like, okay. So I did, and then they hired me. So I was lucky, and I worked for them all of the summers during college. And I would go up as a tech, and then I would roll into as an actor. And then the director up there worked down in South Florida. So then he brought me down to South Florida. So he offered me a show, and I was like, I'm going to leave school because I've kind of reached the capacity of what I'm going to learn.
Yeah. You got as much as you were going to get from that, and you had something to go to.
Yeah. So then that was that. Yeah. So that's kind of...
Okay, so...
The trace of, like...
Yeah.
Starting out in the world.
South Florida where?
It's no longer there, but it was the Royal Palm Dinner Theater, which is in Boca Raton, mm-hmm. which was Jan McCart, who's kind of an icon mm-hmm. down there. So it was her dinner theater. So I got hired for Anything Goes, which I don't tap, and why I ever agreed to do that show, I shouldn't have, but I was dumb and didn't know. And
it seems to me that you have done, I mean, well, I got in the show, you play instruments, but I don't play, and you dance, but I don't dance, but you tap, but I don't tap, but never mind.
It just, yeah, I was so naive that it just kind of worked. I mean, I learned to play
instruments. No, it's fine. It's fine. I think it's great. I mean, I think that that's, your willingness to do that is not foolishness.
Just, there was a lot of naivete in it, and
but you wound up doing whatever you needed to do,
like,
right?
I can learn.
Right, I can learn. That's
I can
right.
learn to do this. And I think because at that age, it doesn't creep into you yet that you might not be good at something. So, like, that hadn't ever entered into my psyche. Like,
I understand.
I might not be good at this. Like, it just never.
No, I got it.
It never entered.
I got it. I think that isn't true for everybody, but it was very clearly true for you, and it's wonderful. It's an amazing quality.
I mean, I think
quality.
Back, I'm like, oh, my God, I must have sucked in that show. But, like, I, you know, didn't know it at the time.
And, well, clearly you didn't suck too bad because they kept hiring you, so.
I think they disliked me.
Yeah, right, sure.
Well, you know, I've been lucky that I haven't worked with a ton of theater companies, I think, in my span, but I'm always usually hired back.
Yes, right, and this, well, never mind. I'm not going to speak the obvious here. So how did you wind up? You wound up at
the Oslo?
Yeah, no?
So I was in South Florida, and so I worked down in the South Florida area for a smidge of time, and I've always been, I'm not a singer-singer, I'm a character singer, and so always taking, you know, always trying to, like, get better. And so my voice teacher they were hiring, like, this other Pump Boys and Dinettes, so, like, that connected me to that producer, so then I came over to the other coast and was working, and then kind of back to South Florida for a while. And I had met a actress during a production of Parade who was in New York and needed a subleaser. And so I kind of knew it was kind of now or never. And so that I moved to New York. I had never been there before.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So I just was like, ah!
Yeah,
scary. Moved with like $1,000 and a suitcase.
Well, and yeah, nothing in your early life resembled it, so.
No, not at all. Right. And we had never, you know, we didn't travel as a family because that's not something one we could afford or
right,
we just didn't
right.
do. So that was overwhelming, and it took me a while to trans. I knew after like 2 days of being in New York that one of us was not like the other. And I needed to be here, but it was not a lifetime city for me,
right,
like instantly.
Right.
So then I was in New York for a very long time, you know, doing what you do, pounding the pavement and auditioning and taking classes and working, and had worked, you know, regionally kind of a lot. And then I guess it was 2000, I don't know, I think in terms of shows, not years. But the theater back home, I hadn't seen my family in forever, and so they were doing production of Singing in the Rain that year, and so and they still see me as like 12. So I was like, you know what, I think I like, this is perfect, and it'd be great, I'd be able to do that show, stay through the holidays, this would be awesome. So I had a campaign for them to cast me because they still saw me as this little kid.
Yeah.
And so they cast me, and it was great, and so I got to go back home, and then I'd done Smoke on the Mountain kind of all over the place at some point, but I had not done that show in about six, seven years. It had been a while, and once again, Denise quit, and they were like, and I was like, oh my God, no, but there I was. I was like, okay, I think I can do it. So that kind of started that whole venture up again, so then I did Smoke, there's Sanderson at Christmas, which I had never done, and then I got to do the premiere of Smoke on the Mountain Homecoming. So, like, that started a whole other opportunity to kind of tour around and do that show.
My goodness.
So who knew, you know? And so then I was back in New York, and as much as I loved performing and doing that stuff, I just... if I played another dumb person, or somebody who sang and played instruments. Mm-hmm. Like, I just was not...
That wasn't what you wanted to do.
No, artistically, I wasn't fulfilled in any way. And right. I was like, there's something wrong with me that, you know, I'm working as an actor, but, like, I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I did those bluegrass shows for forever because each show, I could get better at something. I'm like, God, I still can't play this one chord, but I could, like... you know,
get
better at it. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't happy. So then I was taking classes in New York, as you do, but it's so hard to really grow in class in New York because you're bartending or doing whatever you're doing and auditioning to try to pay the bills. And so you have your Monday night class.
Right, right.
And Sunday rolls around and you haven't...
You haven't worked on it.
So I was like, this is kind of, I'm wasting my time. So that's when I started thinking about graduate school as an opportunity to just kind of focus on an acting training because I had never, I really had zero acting training.
Right.
Zero. I did it backwards. I did a ton of shows.
Yeah.
I worked nonstop.
You worked, right, but you didn't train.
But I didn't
right.
have formal... training.
Right.
I'd always just kind of done. And so, you know, some of that was the best training in the world because, you know, I figured out how to be comedic from one person because
mm-hmm.
I just studied how brilliant he was
wow.
to try to figure out what is he doing. So that I can't take back, but I really wanted just some formal training to do some deeper stuff because it was in there. And it wasn't that I couldn't do it, but I wanted to be taken a little bit more seriously and just wanted knowing kind of the cog in the wheel that I fit in because of how I sound and how I look. Like, who knows whether I was going to get cast as anything like that, but I knew that it was there, and that was what was really important to me. So that kind of became the whole graduate school venture.
So you auditioned...
I auditioned and got into a few schools, and then I picked the Oslo because what interested me most about the Oslo was the fact that it wasn't at a school.
it's at a theater.
It's at a theater, and, you know, I went back to graduate school at 31.
Wow.
So I wasn't interested in... going to a university. Like,
right.
I was past that stage in my life, and for me, like, that just was a little...
It was going backwards.
It was going backwards,
mm-hmm.
and so what I really liked about the Oslo was the fact that it was with a theater, and then your third year, you did go into the company, and so, like, that was... Maybe it was a little safe in that way, in that it was a world that I kind of knew. I knew what
yeah.
the expectations were, and...
Well, it wasn't, in its way, it wasn't that different from your original
yeah.
theater experience,
yeah.
right?
And so I liked that the setup of the program.
And you didn't have to pick up the trash.
Didn't have to pick up the trash. I don't know. As a student, you're, yeah. And I am teaching now, and I didn't know that I would love teaching, and I do. And I actually ended up teaching in my time at the Oslo, but... at the time when I first started, that wasn't part of the program. So, which as a graduate student for a lot of programs, you have to teach undergrad. And I wanted to...
You just wanted to learn.
I wanted to focus on my own process
yes.
first.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I really wanted to focus on, was me not having to...
Yeah, it would have been a distraction.
Distraction. And then I did get to teach in the Oslo because they launched a program, which I'm glad that they did. And so it was lovely to kind of see, okay, what do I really know?
Mm-hmm,
you know, because
yes.
you can't really, I think if you can't verbalize it and then teach it, you're just not...
They say you don't have it unless you can give it away.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. so that was, you know, I'd be like, oh, man, I still haven't figured that out. But it was lovely. So that's kind of a very long-winded...
Well, and then there must have been some period in between the end of the Oslo and the beginning of Urbanite.
Yeah, so, oh goodness, that's just as crazy. So, yeah, so graduated from the Oslo, and, you know, it's a weird thing, because, like, you get your third year, and you're like, where are you going, what are you doing, where
yeah,
are you going,
right,
what are you
right,
doing,
right.
and you're like, oh my God, I don't know. And I think it was, and my class as a whole was a little older, a lot of us didn't go back to school till late, and had been out there working. So it was kind of nice to leave the world behind and go into the safety net of, yeah. of school, which I think is why we handled the pressure much better, because it was like, this is school.
Yeah, really. You think this is pressure? Go out there and have to be a bartender and have to make your clear, right?
This is not the real world.
Yeah, right.
So I decided to, and sometimes I wonder if I had picked going back to a different city, if you know, the story would have been different. Mm-hmm. But went back to New York, I think, because it was safe and, like, I knew it.
Yeah.
So went back to New York, was doing what you do, pounding the pavement. I had met the love of my life here during graduate school, so he moved up there with me. And so, you know, we were doing it as you do, and went down to Louisiana to do some gigs. And then I had applied for this, like, weird job on a cruise ship. Like, I thought it was, like, a TV thing, and it ended up not being that, but it kind of was. And then got the job, and financially, it offered me an opportunity to get completely out of debt. And to kind of recover from going to graduate school. Because at the time when I went, I couldn't really afford to go, but I couldn't afford not to go. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those decisions. So it was scary because I knew, acting-wise, things were just starting to bubble. But I wanted, so we made a vision board, and my goal was to have artistic freedom. And I thought, this is...
It's going to buy it for you.
This is going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll sacrifice to get there. So did that. And then my partner got to come out on the ship with me as my assistant, which is hilarious. If you want to know, you're meant to be for marriage. Work and live on a cruise ship together and have your girlfriend be your boss. So we did that and then came back to Sarasota on vacation. And he got a job offer here, which was like, no, this isn't in the plan. An amazing, incredible opportunity. And so we had to take it. So we, you know, hatched a plan that I would go back and forth from New York and he would stay here because we, you know, needed a sacrifice for the greater good. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the plan. And then through that, really started thinking about how it was, you know, auditioning in New York, working, doing that as you do. And just had a day as I was walking in Queens that I had an audition. You know, you go to Equity, you wait in line, you get there, you do your audition. And my audition time is like at 4. And I just looked across the table at the poor little casting director. And I was like, you've been here all day. Like, mm-hmm. Here I am to audition for you. But I wanted to be like, I'm sorry. Like, the poor thing had been on audition since 8 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So it just... And as I was walking back into Queens, I was like, there's just got to be a better way. This doesn't make sense, like, to keep...
Pushing that.
I was like, it doesn't make sense. And getting called in for great shows, but, like, just shows that I was like, I don't want to do this show. Uh-huh. And getting cast in stuff and been like, like,
yes,
you know, this isn't what I want to do. So that was kind of when the idea first started to hatch of, like, how do I make this viable? And then making the decision of being, I was like, New York is not where I'm supposed to be. Like, I don't like this city. I don't want to live here. This chapter is closed. I'm not sure what the next chapter is going to be. But part of that was to secure kind of some artistic freedom because it was on my vision board and I'd made it halfway. But I was like, it's just not happening. So auditioning like crazy in Florida, kind of auditioning on the other coast as well to kind of see where the cards might land. And then as I was here in Sarasota, just kind of really looking, I'd seen some stuff at Home Resource, which they have an amazing space, and it's so incredible what they've done and allow artists to do. And just thought that there might be room for something
like that
on a slightly bigger scale. And, you know, so I was looking at pop-up space, how much could it be, like, what options are. You know, I could go home and work at the theater back home for the rest of my life if I wanted to, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was like, no, they do amazing stuff, but it's just not kind of the work that I want to do right now. And then I connected with our developer, Harry Lipstein. We had an amazing chat about theater and art and talked about who I am and what I wanted to do. And he had almost opened up a company up in New Paltz, which I know that area very, very well. And so, you know, we had that in common. We're talking about it. And then so I kind of pitched him, and he kind of pitched me. And I knew that I couldn't do it by myself. There was no way. And Brendan, who had been working in Florida a lot as well, we both had kind of been circling around each other and just kind of missing each other. And in graduate school, we weren't really friends because we were in different classes. And knew that, you know, he was somebody who got it done. And I don't know. I just was like, I think that he's going to want to do this. And it's going to take somebody as crazy as I am who has the same work ethic that I do. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about it, and then, you know, here we are.
Yes. Yeah, amazing.
There's a lot of stuff that happened in between.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. No. This is basically the story. Right. And you've been so wonderfully successful.
I pinch myself every day, you know. When I was auditioning for graduate schools, it was like, what do you see yourself in 5 years? And my answer was running my own theater company. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. And that would people be like, really? And I'm like, yes. Like, that's, you know, really what I want to do. I love the collaborative stuff. And, you know, it happening so fast, we're still trying to, I think, catch up to it all. And every day is a new adventure. But unbelievably, you know, blessed to have opened Freak. I was like walking into the theater and I was like all like misty-eyed and like crying, and to be like, God, it took, you know, not that 37 is not old, but it's not in the scheme of things, but like it took till 37 starting my own company to finally do a piece of work that I really wanted to do.
Yes, but
it is like, man, that took a long time for that to happen. But that's what it's like.
It's so amazing, because my guess is that if you looked at the percentage of people who ever get to do exactly what they want to do,
it's small.
Yes, it's tiny. It's very tiny. So I don't think 37 years is all that much given the scheme. However,
no, it's not. It's not. It's a blip.
It's a blip. And
but, you know, I've been at it since I was 9.
Well, but I think it's that you have a profound sense of what you want and need.
Mm-hmm.
You may not always have been able to get it or get it exactly, but you didn't lose that. So you were always aiming for what you needed, right? I think a lot of people get lost in what's available.
Yeah.
And they either don't know what they want, or they don't feel like they have the right to it, or they don't hold on to it, but you did.
Well, and I think because I didn't have anything, and if I ever wanted anything,
you had to get it.
I had to get it by myself.
Right.
And, you know, my mom always raised me to be independent, to work hard, never accept no for an answer, and
I love it. It's the same thing as, you know, I knew if I stood here that I'd get to be in the front, and she can't take my job, that giving up the hat, that's mine.
Yeah.
I mean, it was always there.
Yeah.
It was always there. So this is just a through line. It wandered a bit.
Yeah.
But it was always going in this direction.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think that we make our own destiny, and I, of course, you know, life hits you sometimes like a ton of bricks, but you can, like, lay down and die, or you can pick yourself up and figure it out. Or, you know, even with some disappointments in graduate school, I was like, man, this isn't exactly what I thought it was, but this is the decision I've made. You have to make the best of it and gain every second of, like, you have to use it.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
opposed to waller and, oh, I didn't get cast in this. Okay, well, I didn't, so, but what else can I do in the interim?
To get what I need. But that's the point I'm making, is that you always had that. So it's not, so,
I thank my mom for that.
Really? Yeah. Really, I think that's accurate. I only ask one other question, and it is, having given an entire life to this work, and you have.
Yes.
Is there anything you would say about what that's like?
Oh, man. I don't know how I would say that question. I mean, I feel really lucky to have found my passion and to be able to do my passion. And my mom said this to me, is because I get really frustrated with, like, people who are lazy.
That are lazy?
Lazy. Yeah. It's, like, pet peeve of mine. Or who waller in self-pity. And my mom has pointed out to me that, you know, not everybody knows what they want to do. And I'm like, it's never occurred to me that you don't know. And so I feel so blessed that I have figured out,
yes. You
know, what that is. Sometimes I think life would be easier if I didn't, or yeah. I didn't always keep, like, you know, wanting something bigger.
Wanting something bigger. Do you want something bigger now?
Yeah, I think I have, I hope with the Urbanite that, one, I want us to keep doing season after season, so that's a goal, and my goal for the company is I really want us to have a national presence, and my goal is we want to do new plays and nurture new plays and develop new works and continue to be able to give more and more opportunities to artists. So that's my bigger goal. Like, mm-hmm. Right now we were just kind of waving at the mountain, and now we're like at base camp, so we still have a while to go. So, yeah, so there's still bigger things that I want, but I think in devoting my life to theater, I feel blessed that I get to do what it is that I love to do, and I know that not everybody gets to do that. So I feel a responsibility then, you know, that I need to make it the best that I can make it and appreciate it every day. I think sometimes actors can get really selfish or think, me, 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 and, oh, that's a crappy audience, or, oh, there's only 5 people out there today, but what a life. You get to put on your face and pretend to be somebody else for an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really not that bad. We do make a lot of sacrifices, but at the end of the day, I think it's sometimes it's really easy to forget that. I'm so blessed to be able to get to do what I want to do, and to have so many people that have helped me get there to be able to do what I want to do. So
it's a perfect place to stop. Thank you very, very much. So blessed to have discovered my passion, to know what I want to do, to be able to do what I want to do. It is, of course, the mission of The Lynn Show to say this is, in my view, everybody's birthright. That it is possible to know at the beginning of your life what it is that you were meant to do. What is it that when you are doing it, you are most yourself? Summer knew at 3, at 4, at 5, what she wanted to do, who she was, what made her life feel right. And for her, it's like she says at the beginning and she says at the end, putting on the makeup, putting on the clothes, being someone else for a while, that's what it is for Summer. And of course, fortunately for her, she discovered it very early in her life, and more fortunately for her is the amazing support she got from her mother. I think the discouragement by families is dramatically more common than the encouragement by families. And so I'm not only speaking to those of you who had discouragement and therefore were forced to lose or at least put aside something really essential to you. I am also speaking to parents and hoping that you will hear that you can encourage something as absurd as feeding your little girl on the floor because she's pretending to be a cat. And that if you allow your child to become who he or she is, that she or he will become the person they were meant to be. It is my hope that listening to Summer, her passion, her happiness, her gratitude has had an impact on you. If this has had an impact on you and you wonder if maybe you have had to sacrifice something essential about yourself, or if you remember something that you were drawn to which you have been unable to pursue, or if you remember stories told about you when you were a child, about things that you did that you no longer do, and you want to consider the possibility that you can recover some of that, that, of course, is the work of psychotherapy. And if you have questions about that, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynshow.com. There's a button to click to email me any questions that you might have. I'll be happy to hear from you and to answer you. Up there, you can also get a copy of my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do, What You Want to Do, and What to Do About It. You can even listen to the first chapter. I'm reading it up there. You can listen to podcasts of all my shows, including this one. So as always, I hope you got something that you can use from this show. Something that, as I have said over and over again, inspired you. Maybe something that'll encourage you to come out and see the shows at the Urbanite Theater. Something that intrigued you. Something you now know that you didn't know. Something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten